Today we have the great joy of celebrating the solemnity of the Epiphany. The word Epiphany, of course, means a manifestation. And so it's the manifestation of the divinity of Christ. The wise men are the first people to recognize, from the outside that is, to recognize that Jesus is God. And so that's why it is that manifestation. And we look at what we celebrate in this feast, we need to be a little careful with it, because we have put all kinds of things into it that maybe aren't necessarily supposed to be there. Nothing inherently wrong with them, but, you know, maybe a little more than what should be. For instance, think of the opening hymn we sang, We Three Kings. Nowhere does it say that these guys are kings. It calls them magi. Closest we could come in English would be magicians. They're astrologers. They're people who are looking at the stars. You and I practiced astrology. That would be a mortal sin, because it's trying to find something in the stars that, you know, are going to tell us what's going on. In this case, God actually used that for them by allowing this star to be in the constellation that they had assigned to Judah. And the star was a sign of a king. You'll see that, for instance, if you go back to the book of Numbers, I think it's in the 24th chapter, and there we hear about a pagan prophet by the name of Baal. And Baal was hired to curse Israel. And when he climbed up the mountain to be able to look at Israel below him, and he was going to curse them, God wouldn't allow it. Instead, he had to bless them. So they paid him a second time to do the same thing, and he went up and wound up blessing them again. And in one of those oracles that he spoke of blessing, he speaks about a star. He says, it's a long way off, but I see a star rising in Judah. And so, did these guys know about that? Possibly. We don't know that, but maybe so. Regardless, if they were able to see this star in the constellation, that's how they understood, and that's why they came to Jerusalem, to be able they went, of course, to the palace. This was the capital. They went to the king's palace because, obviously, that's where a royal child's going to be born, only to find out that's not the case. And yet, at the same time, what we recognize in that is a fulfillment of what we heard in the first reading. Jerusalem, rise up, your light has come. But did Jerusalem want him? So the three magi come to Herod, and they say, where's the newborn king of the Jews? And the first part of this, we shouldn't be too surprised by. It says, when Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled. No kidding. Herod was a man of great jealousy, and he was very jealous of the throne. Anybody who he thought might want to take over as the king, he had them killed, including 23 of his own sons. So when you hear about what he did to the innocents and so on in Bethlehem, it shouldn't surprise us. But it's the next line that is surprising and tragic. So it says, when King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled. And then it says, and all Jerusalem with him. Think about that for a minute. The very thing that the Jewish people had been waiting for a couple of thousand years, was now happening. And they were troubled by it. They didn't want him. So again, they could look at not only the book of Numbers, they could look at what we heard in the first reading, that the camels and dromedaries and so on are going to come, and they're going to bring their gifts to the king, all these different things that we see happening. But they were troubled by it. So you can ask your own self, if you knew that the Lord was going to come back this afternoon. The world's going to end. The Lord is coming back. You're going to be troubled by that, or you're going to rejoice in it? That's what happened in Jerusalem. The Messiah had arrived. They didn't want him because they would have to change their lives, because something would need to happen internally, and they didn't want it. Consequently, they were troubled by it. But nonetheless, these three magi, to whom once again we have given names, Melchior and Caspar and Balthazar, I don't know where those came from. We've assigned them coming from different places, one from Africa and one from Asia and one from Europe. All that, again, we can make it make sense. That's fine. But it doesn't say any of that. So all that we know is that they had come from a long way. And now they were looking for the child. And when they found him, they brought him their gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And while the saints can lay out for us, as they do, that the gold is because he's a king and the frankincense is because he's God and we could burn incense to the Lord, and the myrrh is because he came to die, so that's what they would anoint the body with, and we can understand what those gifts are about. But we have to ask ourselves, what gift was most important to the Lord? Which one did he glory in? Now, you might, again, if you look at it on the natural level, say he's just a baby. He doesn't even know what's going on. He's God. He knows exactly what's going on. And that's the part that is most important. And tragically, they kind of played it down in the translation that we have. Because what it says, for instance, when they come to Herod, it says, we saw a star at its rising, we've come to do him homage. And then when they saw him, it says they prostrated themselves and did him homage. That is not what it says in the Greek. In the Greek, it says they prostrated themselves and they worshiped him. They worshiped him. There was something that they recognized that was far greater than what their eyes were able to see. Because you don't just worship somebody who's a king. But they worshiped him. So our Lord doesn't really care about the gold and the frankincense and the myrrh. He cares about their hearts. And this is the mystery that St. Paul is talking about in the second reading. That this that had been hidden from time past, but now has been made known by the Holy Spirit to the apostles and the prophets, that the Gentiles are co-heirs with the Jews, members of the same body, that they are participants in the inheritance, which is God himself. Most of us here probably don't come from Jewish blood. In other words, we're the Gentiles, the people of the nations that are outside of Israel. And now we have been brought into this mystery, the mystery of the people of God, and even more, the mystery of being the children of God, as you and I are. So that being the case now, we look at this and we see that the Magi bringing gifts to the Lord and so on, which is actually where our tradition of giving Christmas gifts comes from. So now as we look back for a week and we say, all right, we've given all of our gifts to the people that we love and we've received the gifts from the people that we love. Let me ask you a simple question. What gift did you give to Jesus for Christmas? The gift that God gave to you is Jesus. What did we give to him? If we give gifts to the people that we love, and we're supposed to love him with our whole heart and soul and strength more than everybody else, what did we give him? The nice thing is, it's not too late. Today is actually the day of the gift giving. Take that to prayer and ask yourself, what gift should I give to Jesus? What would he want? Just like what we saw with the gold and frankincense and myrrh, he doesn't care about your stuff. The greatest gift that the Magi offered him was to worship him. And that's what he's looking for from us, to love him. As Catholics, one of the things that we can fall very easily into a trap of is just going through the motions. We come here for the worship of God. We sit and we stand and we kneel and we make the prayers and so on. And it's very easy just to be able to do what everybody else is doing or repeat the prayers that we all know and not have our minds or our hearts focused on it at all. So he wants us to really love him. Maybe if you're looking for a gift to give him, could you commit to spending an hour a week in adoration? Or even better, a chunk of time every single day. Maybe come to daily Mass. If not every day, at least once or twice during the week, can you do that? Maybe it's praying the rosary, or maybe the Holy Face Chaplet or the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Maybe it's a matter of looking at your life and saying, you know, if I would be troubled because I knew the Lord was coming, then why are we troubled? Let's get rid of whatever's troubling us. If there's some sin in the way, let's get rid of it. Let's work on overcoming that so that we can be truly pleasing to the Lord. These are things that we can all think about and ponder. If we look in St. John's Gospel in the high priestly prayer of Jesus, it's a beautiful line, but of course, with my twisted mind, I find it kind of humorous. And Jesus said, Father, they, you and me, they are your gift to me. Like poor Jesus. This is the gift that God gave to him? Well, it is. So Jesus is the gift God has given to you and me. You and I are the gift that God gave to Jesus. So what are we doing with that gift? Are we truly loving him? Are we truly worshiping him? That's what we want to be about. We could give him homage by giving him lip service. He's not interested in lip service. He wants us to worship him because he is God. And it's not because he gets anything from it, because he's perfect. He gets zero from our worship, nothing. But we are the ones who gain from it. If we are truly loving him, then we're doing what we were created to do. We're the ones who benefit, not him. So when we say what he wants is for us to worship him, what was most important with the Magi is that they worshiped him. It's not because he got something from it. It's because of what happened in them. And what he's interested in is what's happening in our hearts. So that's what we want to think about. To look into our hearts and to be able to conform them to him. To be a worthy gift that God has given to his Son, and to have the gift that we have chosen to give to him. So think about that again. On this day of gift giving, what do you want to give to Jesus? What he wants is your heart. That's the only thing that is really worthy of him. He said he doesn't care about your stuff. He cares about you. And he wants you to be able to love with your whole heart and soul and strength, which is what he's asked us to do. And if we can do that, that's what will be most pleasing to him, because it will be what will fulfill us, and it will be the very best for us. So in glorifying him, in being that gift that God gave to his Son, it will be able to allow us to be able to receive the gift that God gave to us. That gift is Jesus. So that mutual giving and receiving, we can make that choice. It's one thing for God to give us to his Son. It's another for us to make the choice to say, I want to do this. My choice also to cooperate with God and give myself to his Son. To learn then from these men that, while it doesn't say they're wise men, there was obviously a lot of wisdom there. They prostrated themselves and they worshiped him.